Hello, everyone, and welcome to Midnight in the Mountains. This is your co-host, Aaron, speaking, and I have Laura joining me to bring you guys some more spooky stories. So, Laura, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. So I would like to ask Laura, what stories do you have for us today?
All right. Well, I'll start with the second story I found. I'm going to save the good one for last because it's exciting. I don't know. But okay. So there is this ship in Oregon on the Sillitz Bay. So hopefully I said that correctly. And in the Sillitz Bay area of Oregon, there's a ghost ship that can be seen off in the distance on a foggy day. It will be seen for a few seconds and then it disappears. Not much is known about this phantom ship, but the story has been added to local ghost tours, paranormal tours, and then people come from all over hoping to see the ship. Okay, so multiple ships have actually wrecked in this area, so they're not really sure which ship could be this phantom ghost ship, but there are a few speculations because several wreckages have been found, and then there's a few that have been documented in the area. The wreckage of the schooner ship that was found at the mouth of Schooner Creek, now which is what gave the creek its name from this ship that they found, is in the Sillitz Bay. So in this area, there are a few ships that actually have wrecked and run aground. And there actually is a wreckage of a schooner ship that was found at the mouth of Schooner Creek in the Sillitz Bay. And the creek received its name because of this unknown ship wreckage. It's theorized that the ship may be the Blanco, and the Blanco set sail from San Francisco and was abandoned and made its way over to the mouth of the bay, and it wrecked in 1864. So I have a newspaper article. So it's something that's been like photocopied and then obviously uploaded, and at the top it has a handwritten date. And it says 2672, so I'm assuming from 1972. So it reads, the title of the newspaper article is Unknown Shipwreck Barred by Low Tide at Sillitz Bay. The tremendous power of Pacific seas and tidal currents is evidenced each winter along the Oregon coast. In a single tide, previously exposed reefs and rocks are buried under tons of sand bulldozed from the ocean floor by crashing breakers. And just as quickly, tremendous quantities of sand are scoured from the beaches, exposing such things as agate beds, fossilized sea creatures, and ancient tree stumps, among things uncovered occasionally at low tide by powerful forces of the sea, are branched barnacled frames and planking of an ancient wreck on the east shore of the Sillitz Bay, a quarter mile southwest of the mouth of the stream named for it Schooner Creek. Time and tide have erased all positive clues to her identity, leaving only theories from which is almost impossible to determine where legend ends and fact begins. According to an account published in the book Pioneer History of North Lincoln County, Oregon, by Earl Nelson, Indian legend, the 100-foot schooner Sunbeam, which cleared San Francisco in the late 1880s, was never heard from again, has been suggested by some historians as the ship whose last voyage ended in disaster on the Sillitz Sands. Schooners lost. Other marine chroniclers suggests that either the 113-ton schooner Uncle John, which was lost off Cape Foulweather in March 1876, or the schooner Phoebe Fay, which stranded north of Cape Foulweather in April 1882, could have been carried into the Sillitz on southerly winds and currents. Most evidence seems to support that the belief that Sillitz Bay lost schooner was the 125-foot brig Blanco, which was built at North Bend, Oregon in 1860 to 1861, and it is reported to have capsized off the Sillitz in 1864 and drifted into the bay bottom side up. Strong evidence is revealed in a letter written in 1864 by Ben Simpson, Indian agent at the Tsilhet's Indian Agency, to H.H. Luce of Coos Bay. It reads, "A large brig named Blanco from the San Francisco was wrecked a few days since at the mouth of Tsilhet's River. I have just returned from an examination of the vessel. She is a total wreck. Her masts are gone, her deck is broken, her hull is split from deck to keel, and I fear the crew are lost." So now, I also, you know, from another website that I had looked at, I saw that it said that the ship, that the crewmen abandoned the ship and then just let it. I don't know how they abandoned it. I don't know if they were by land that they could have jumped off, or if they just had...
They had a lifeboat, maybe?
Yeah, a lifeboat or something, and bailed, and then just let it float away. So, but I mean, that article talks about how it sounds like the people went missing too. So I don't really know either way. And then I have a little more. So here's another clip, another news clipping. And this one is dated, it has the handwritten date in the corner, from 8-1971. And it says, "Wreck remains still visible. No one knows for sure just what caused the schooner at the mouth of Schooner Creek to wreck. Now barnacled ribs sink even further into the sand flats and into oblivion. The Indian legend claims that the ship grounded, Indians attacked, killing everyone abroad and confiscating the cornmeal sacks for clothing. It has been suggested that the 100-foot sunbeam sailing out of San Francisco in the 1880s is now the carcass in the Tsilhet Sands. A 113-ton schooner, the Phoebe Fay, lost off Cape Foulweather in 1883 is another possibility. The 1864 wreck of the Blanco is yet another workable surmise. The historical truth, be it Blanco, Sunbeam, Fay, or even some other ill-fated vessel, lies deep beneath heavy sands." So I found another website because I wanted some more on here. And it says Albany Journal clip, January 6, 1865. And it's a very small clip from, I don't know, it just says Albany Journal clip. So I don't know what that would have been if...
Newspaper clip, maybe?
Whatever. Or yeah.
Probably?
Yeah. That's what I had assumed. It says, "Wreck. A large brig named Blanco was wrecked recently near the mouth of Tsilhet's River. It's believed by persons who visited the wreck that the crew were all lost." So that's all that gives there. So, I mean, probably was the Blanco, but not completely sure.
Sure.
But then there's also a scientist in 1951 to examine the wreck and determined it was the right dimensions to be the Blanco. And the findings in 2005 found something with a similar size laying under the bay. What exactly it was, they couldn't say, but it was likely a shipwreck. There was also plenty of theories that this may not be the Blanco, as part of the Oregon coast has plenty of ships go missing.
You know, hearing those stories, it kind of reminds me of like the North Banks of North Carolina, where it's so dangerous there because of all like the shoals and the reefs and all that. There are so many wrecks in that particular area because of how dangerous it is. That area kind of reminds me of that, I guess.
Yeah, and I wonder why, because I didn't come across anything saying that there was anything super dangerous there, but there sure is a lot of wrecks that have happened there. The fact that they can't figure out what ship that was.
It could also be, and you would probably have talked to like an oceanographer, but maybe like the currents and things just kind of naturally kind of funnel it into that area. You know, maybe it's like a convergence of a couple of the...
like rip currents?
Yeah, you know, it just kind of naturally kind of funnels it into that bay area so that, you know, if there is something floating out in the ocean, even if it's like, you know, mild off, it just kind of gets sucked into that particular area.
Right. Like that's how, I don't know where that is, but where all that, like all the plastic ends up, all the garbage ends up in like that one spot.
In the Pacific Ocean, it's just like this huge patch of like garbage. Yeah. What do they call it? The Great Garbage Patch? Or
I have no idea.
Something like that. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, I would also be interested to see is that ship capsized in the 1800s, the late 1800s. But they said, and maybe I'm wrong, but wasn't Oregon colonized by white people by the late 1800s? Or was it still kind of like a wild, like, you know, kind of on the West Coast and, you know, we didn't really know a whole lot about that. It just kind of seems weird that, you know, Indians would attack in the late 1800s in Oregon. To me.
Okay, so it says that Oregon became the 33rd state in 1859 during the Civil War. Southerners who had settled in timber-producing areas along the southwestern coast of the state threatened secession.
It could probably still happen because, you know, Oregon has a pretty decent-sized long coast. If it was just like, let's just say 10,000 people that live there and, you know, like just where they were harvesting timber, there could be still plenty of Native Americans around there. But just the timeline seems a little...
I know. I was wondering that, too, because it kind of... I don't know. I got confused.
Well, you know, a lot of these shipwreck stories seem like they've been embellished just a little bit. You know, like,
oh, for sure.
Right. And so on that particular thing, it kind of feels like maybe this had been embellished just a little bit, you know, to make it sound a little bit more interesting, you know, maybe sell some newspaper articles or something along those lines. It's still an interesting story for sure. But, you know, maybe the actual end was a little bit more mundane.
There is another section here that said... Buried there is likely a brig called the Blanco, which apparently wrecked somewhere about 1864. It took a whole month for this to even be reported by local newspapers, and by then, no one really knew what had gone on. The crew was long missing, the cargo was all gone, and the hull was split in two. There are no local native legends about what happened to the crew, largely because the tribes located here at this point were forcibly moved shortly after during another wave of the U.S. government's genocidal treatment of indigenous people. No tribes living here now are descended from the original group, so no word of mouth stories were passed on. Clearly, the ship was looted, and at least one white man at the time blamed a few of the local tribesmen for this and possibly disappeared off the crew. An Indian agent named Simpson, overseeing the reservations, claimed he'd seen some of the ship's supplies, even the crew's clothing, in their hands. However, local residents blamed the wreck itself on the crew's disappearance. It was common practice for Oregon coast homesteaders to raid shipwrecks for construction materials like lumber, as sort of refined material was scarce. Oddly, the ship departed from San Francisco, headed to Coos Bay on the southern Oregon coast. How it wound up this far north is also still a mystery.
The big thing for me on that particular one is like how lawless the West Coast of America was, even as late as the 1860s. You know, that was 150 years ago. It was lawless. I mean, like, literally lawless.
I'm sure it still probably was. But I mean, also, that makes sense, too. Like, I don't know how common it would be if people would go after ships, but, like, shipwrecks and stuff, for sure. You know? Taking advantage of good supplies. Why not? It's just going to go to waste, and you're desperate and need for material. So I could definitely see that.
Those people would have been living out in the woods, like...
Yeah.
Way out in the woods. So if they could get nails or, you know, pieces of steel or even, you know, like they said, the refined stuff on the ship, you know, the timber, you know, you could make a house out of all the timber from that. If you could get it back, you know, to your homestead, of course.
Yeah.
That's a super interesting story. Like, I like that one. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, I came across some other stories that said that you could see this typical ghost story that you can see off in the distance on a foggy night. You can see the ghost ship set sail across the ocean. Like, it's so typical, but it's spooky.
It's still fun, though. Like, yeah. You know, like, I would go out,
exactly.
Go out there and plop me down a lawn chair and say, all right, let's do things.
Oh, yeah. I would totally love to go and see if I could see anything.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, even when you did see something, or if you did see something, just think about, like, what would you actually see? You know, we all have that picture of what a schooner looks like. You know, like the old-fashioned big sailboat schooner ships. But to actually see it out there on the water, even if it's, you know, a ghost ship, like, it'd be like, whoa, that's a thing.
Yeah, that would be really neat.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So my particular story, do you have anything else to add on yours?
Nope. I'm good.
So this one is actually a little bit on the newer side. This ship was found in 2016. So it is a little bit on the newer side. And I'll just kind of jump right in. Now, the initial story that I found for it, because I found two different ones about the same one. One is a little bit more paranormal than the other one. So I'll read the first one and then I'll kind of expand on it just a little bit. So this one is about Manfred Fritz Bajoret. He had spent decades living the life of a solitary sailor. His boat, the Columbo, was his home, his sanctuary, and his only companion. For many, the idea of such an existence would be seen lonely or isolating, but for Bajoret, it was a life of freedom, a chance to roam the seas and live on his own terms. Bajoret was a man of few words who preferred his company to the ocean and the sky over the bustle of the land. His early years were filled with adventures at sea as he sailed from port to port, embracing the rhythm of the waves. In the 1990s, Bajoret took his love for sailing to the extreme, deciding to live entirely on his boat. He sailed across the Atlantic, visited the Caribbean, and then made his way to Southeast Asia, where he continued his solitary journey for years. His life seemed calm, almost serene, yet there was always something a bit haunting about his story. Bajoret, a quiet and private man, had been divorced from his wife in the mid-1990s. The marriage had ended while they were both living on the boat, and his wife returned to Germany, but Bajoret chose to remain at sea. His relationship with the world was through his boat in the open water. In February of 2016, Bajoret's boat, the Columbo, was found drifting off the coast of the Philippines. It was an eerie sight. The boat was in relatively good condition, but it had been drifting for weeks with no one aboard. Authorities boarded the boat, and there they discovered the body of Manfred Fritz Bajoret, still inside, his face peaceful and calm, almost as if he had fallen asleep. He had been dead for several weeks. The scene aboard the Columbo was surreal. His body was found in the cabin, with a logbook beside him that had entries dating back months. The boat had all its navigation systems intact, and it didn't appear if there'd been any struggle. There was no sign of violence, no obvious cause of death, only the eerie stillness of a man who had passed quietly on his own terms. It wasn't until later that the world would learn more about this mysterious death of this lone sailor. The cause of his death was never entirely clear, perhaps a heart attack, perhaps some other medical condition, but it seemed likely that he had died alone in the very solitude that had been his way of life. Theories swirled around what could happen, but in the end, his passing was simply accepted as another part of a story that lived in the sea. And so that's the story about Manfred, which it's kind of a short one, but the initial article that caught my attention was it was initially reported that his body had been mummified, even though he was in the Filipino Sea, which I've been to the Philippines. It's hot there. It's hot. It's sweaty. It's humid. That's not how you mummify a body. When you mummify a body, you basically have to desiccate it and, you know, dry it out, whatnot. And that would not have happened here. It would have just decayed down to, you know, nothing. And the original story also said that they'd decided the body had been not dead for weeks, but had been dead for a week and had been mummified within that week. So there's a little bit of discordance there between these two separate stories. You know, what could have caused his body to be mummified in a very humid tropical part of the ocean with nobody else aboard? I think that's the part that kind of caught my interest in this particular story.
So as soon as you said mummified, I think that I've heard this on another podcast. Mm. And I don't remember if there was an answer or not. I don't think there was. I think it was still a mystery. And then maybe speculation that the salt air had something to do with the drying out of the body. But that is, I mean, that's really strange.
It is. That's, you know, I could see how the salt air could do that, but the heat and humidity, yeah, it seemed like that would have been way more important than the salt
The heat and, I mean, could the heat and the salt have acted and somehow sped up the drying process or something? But then the humidity, that's, I mean, we both know what humidity feels like. You're not, you know, something is going to decay. It's not going to
mummify
dry
itself
out.
It's a little weird.
Yeah, that is very strange. I don't know.
I'm not going to say it's aliens, but
yeah, right? What year did you say that happened?
His boat was found in 2016. So that was 9 years ago.
But how, if he was mummified, how could they have determined that he'd only been passed away for a week?
See, that's the...
How could they even know that?
The only thing I could think of, you know, I tried to look for, like, the records, because it said he was leaving logs, right. But there was nothing that I could find. There was nothing about, like, when the last record was. Like, it said it was months, but, mm-hmm. you know, what, you know, from the time he was found, from the last log, how long was that? Was it a month, a week, a day, a year? You know, like, because that would matter, yeah. right? Because, you know, if it had been a year that he'd been on the boat, you know, maybe he, you know, part of him had decayed and, you know, some of the other parts had been mummified. Like, you know, how mummified was he? But I thought that was kind of interesting. Not so much, you know, his solitary life and he got to see the whole world, but just the way he ended. You know, it's very strange, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good find. That's definitely, definitely strange.
Yep. All right. What do you got for us next?
All right. So I'm going to move on to my next one. And this one, I particularly really like. I almost wish this was more of like just like an urban legend or something, because, you know, it's a very interesting story. But when you think about it actually really happening to people in real life, you're kind of like, oh, this is really messed mm-hmm. up. So my next ghost ship is called the Squando. And this takes place off of, it's called, and I meant to text my friend who speaks Spanish to tell me how to say this, but I forgot. Mm. It is called the, I gotta put it in Google because I'm gonna butcher it.
Not the first time we butchered words, that's for sure.
No. Oh my God. I can't even say it with the pronunciation. All right, let's do a video. Okay, Embarcadero.
Embarcadero.
Okay. All right. So, my next ship is called the Squando, and this took place in the Embarcadero. Sorry if I butchered that. Off of the California coast in San Francisco. And I looked this up because I didn't even know, I never even heard of this place. And it's actually the site of the first major growth spurt in San Francisco during the California Gold Rush in 1849, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. So the Squando was a Norwegian ship docked off the Embarcadero in San Francisco. And in 1890, the captain of the ship caught his wife cheating on him with the first mate. And I don't know what happened between the captain and his wife, but they both ended up conspiring against the first mate, and they planned to murder him. So, yeah, fucked up. Like, she gets caught cheating, and she just completely just...
makes it his fault?
Yeah, just yeah. throws the guy under the bus. Like, are you kidding me? Terrible. Right. So, the wife and the captain, the husband, come up with this plan. Then the wife goes and gets the first mate drunk. She's got him in his cabin, and next thing you know, the captain bursts through the door and she holds the first mate's, you know, her lover, her affair person, holds his arms back, and the captain whacks his head off with an axe, murdering him. They throw his body overboard, and apparently they took his head and stuffed it in a locker and kept it under their bed.
All right, so there's a little bit to unpack here. Boy, I'm going to need a degree in psychology, because number one, you know, when you think of a sailor, 1800 sailors,
yeah,
you know, they tend to be fairly fit dudes. You know, they do a lot of physical labor. I would consider them fit guys. Now, I would like to see a female, which it didn't say what, you know, maybe she was a very large woman, hold back a drunk first mate enough that the captain can swing an axe, miss his wife who's holding the guy.
Yeah.
And cut his head off.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't even think about the part where he'd have to miss his wife. I mean, I don't know. And it didn't give a description of how she, I mean, maybe there was some things going on that she was holding it. You know what I'm trying to say, like holding his hands out of the way and things like that. And maybe he never even saw the axe coming. I don't know.
It could have been, you know, just slice the front of the throat, you know, like not a whole cut, you know, and then after, well, no, what I mean is like, you know, cut it and then kind of set him down and take the head off and go that way with it. Right. You know, that would be to me a little bit more, plausible.
Right. I'm so glad we don't do a true crime podcast.
We could, to be fair. Right?
I don't think I'd make it through. I couldn't do it. Couldn't do it.
Mm, yeah. Just one more thing. Why would you keep, you know, if you're going to murder somebody on the ship that you're the captain of and he's your first mate, how messed up do you have to be to keep the head in a locker under the bed you sleep in every night? It just seems like you're asking for trouble.
That's just beyond. Now, I did see that not all of the sources said that they did keep his head in the locker under the bed, but it said that the head was nowhere to be found. So, I mean, I don't know. Did they throw it overboard with his body and then it just didn't show up again? Who knows?
Yeah.
But according to the rest of the story, it seems like they did keep it under their bed, and you'll see why.
Okay.
So the headless corpse did end up being found in the San Francisco Bay. So one story goes that the captain and his wife were executed for their crime of murder. Another story says that they just skipped town, that they ran away and were never seen again. So who knows? I mean, maybe there's records somewhere if the story is actually true. And not long after that, a new captain was appointed, and this poor soul met a similar fate. He ended up being murdered by his crew, and the next two captains had perished as well. One from infection after getting cut on his hand, and the other lost his life in a storm aboard the ship. But there were other accounts. Instead of, you know, the one captain dying from infection and the other captain getting caught in the storm and somehow dying from the storm on the ship, which is kind of strange.
Blown overboard, maybe?
But if they knew that he died from the storm, they would have had to have found his body and he wouldn't have been overboard, right?
I mean, if it was a bad... This is very hypothetical, but if it was a bad enough storm... And, you know, maybe he was being very bravado, you know, and he was knocked overboard. It's not like they have a motor where they can just turn around and try to find his body, right? It would have been, you know, miles away from... Good point. Yeah.
So, but the other account said that these two captains were found mysteriously murdered in their cabins. So I don't know which one's true, but that's awfully strange.
It sounds like that's one of those ships they need to take to Schooner Creek and just bury in the sand because it's a haunted ship.
Yeah, it is. It does become a very haunted ship. In 1893, the crew abandoned the ship in Bathurst, New Brunswick. So the ship continued to run, and in 1893, the crew completely abandoned the ship in Bathurst, New Brunswick, having had enough of the ill-fated vessel. The ship owners couldn't find a new crew. They couldn't even keep watchmen aboard the ship. One night, the night watchman settled into the captain's quarters, and while lighting his lantern, he felt someone grab his sleeve. Glancing down, he saw a hand covered in blood. He looked up to see a headless man dripping with blood from his neck. The watchman heard a bang from under the bed, and then turning to see what made the noise, he saw the locker from underneath the bed, because this room, this quarters that he was in, was the captain's quarters. You know, the one that murdered somebody.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So he saw the locker open up and a bloody head rolled out to his feet. He grabbed his lantern and ran to the deck of the ship and spent the rest of the night there. The same haunting happened to the next six watchmen over the next few weeks, all of them hired and quitting immediately. The owners of the Squando eventually gave up. They dismantled the ship and sold the material. However, another legend says that in 1901, the Squando tried to make one last transatlantic voyage, but it vanished and was never seen again.
Hmm. You know, the question that I have, like, what made this ship, and I get the initial, you know, murder of the first mate, but, like, is that the catalyst to make this ship as haunted as it was? Or was there something that maybe precipitated the love triangle murder of the first mate? Like, was there something out? Did they use some wood from an Indian burial ground or something where it was, like, it was already a little haunted before, you know, all this weird shenanigans happened?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, Aaron.
Oh, well, thank you.
The ship was supposedly cursed before it even set sail. Men died while constructing the ship. A grief-stricken widow cursed the ship and everyone who was to set sail on it. It's said that she sacrificed her own life by committing suicide to give the curse its power. And it's said that on foggy nights, you can still see a ghostly outline of the Squando sailing along the San Francisco coastline.
Well, look, you already had all the answers for me. I just had to wait for the end of the story.
I just wanted to see. I paused because I wanted to see if you had anything to add or questions. And then you just totally lined it up perfectly for me.
A plus work. A plus. That is a... You know, that is an interesting one because I actually didn't see that particular one when I was looking around. And that's a very good find. That's a good one. I like that. I like it a lot.
Isn't it? Like, I just love that story. Mm-hmm. It's so... Because it actually is a ghost ship. It's a haunted ship.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, the good thing about that one, too, is also it takes place on both coasts. You know, it started out in San Francisco. Yep. And New Brunswick would have been on the East Coast. So that means, it had at some point traveled, you know, there would have been no Panama Canal then. So it went down either across the world to the East Coast of America, or it went over the down past South America and come back up. Because the Panama Canal wasn't until the 19-something, 20s, 10s, something like that.
That is if the owners didn't dismantle it and sold the material. That is if it actually, they did take one last trip and then it just mysteriously vanished. True. Which I like that. That's that theory better. That story better.
To me, it feels like insurance fraud. Like they just sent it out there, sank it and said, I don't know what happened. I just want my money back. That's all I want.
Yeah. Back in the day, you have all that going on. Yeah. I'd be done with it too.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. Like, how could I get something out of this? Because I'm tired of dealing with this.
And, you know, I was wondering if it actually had been dismantled and they sold the materials, what happened to the pieces that they sold? Because, I mean, there is that story. I forget what plane it was, but there is that story of that plane that had crashed and they reused some of the pieces of it. And then... it's said that, like, ghosts have been seen aboard the plane that those pieces have been used on.
Oh.
I think I heard that on an old Art Bell episode.
Good story. Excellent story, yeah, actually.
That was a good one. I like that one.
To kind of end this, I just want to touch on a couple of the two, what I consider, like, the two that I know of, like the Mary Celeste and the Flying Dutchman, just to give a brief overview. And there's one other one that I want to touch on. This one may or may not be true. So this one's called the SS Orang Medan. And there's not a whole lot of information about it. And that's why I kind of think that it could just be like a story that's kind of got passed down and turned into something. It's very short, so I'll read it. One of the most notorious ghost ship stories, the tale of the SS Orang Medan, is shrouded in mystery. The legend goes that in 1947, a cargo ship off the coast of Indonesia put out a distress call with the words, quote, all officers, including captain, are dead, lying in chart room and bridge, possibly the whole crew dead, end quote. Before help could arrive, a second message was radioed with just two words, I die, end quote. Rescue workers who boarded the ship discovered to their horror that the crew members were indeed deceased, with their bodies contorted and arms outstretched as if fending off an attacker, but without any signs of injury. An engine room fire then caused the ship to be abandoned and eventually seen taking its ghastly secrets and any chance of an autopsy investigation to Davy Jones' locker. Later reports contradicted the supernatural tale, however, with a 1948 newspaper article citing a survivor who blamed the deaths on a leak of its deadly cargo, sulfuric acid. What's more, there is no record of the SS Orang Medan in Lloyd's registry, leading some to conclude this ghost ship is pure fabrication. That's why I kind of brought that one to the end, just because there's not... the story's kind of fun, you know? And I will say, sulfuric acid is pretty nasty stuff. However, I don't know if it can be aerosol. You know, like if it was leaking, I think it's more of a liquid than a gas form. So you would think that sulfuric acid, it wouldn't just like, the people wouldn't just die. Like, it would be more like they would be burned from the bottoms up, you know, their feet or legs or something like that. But it's still a fun story, nonetheless. Nonetheless at all. The other two... So the Flying Dutchman, I mean, that's probably the most famous one out of all like haunted ghost or haunted ship stories. And just a quick blurb on that one. This is the most iconic ghost ship in maritime culture is the Flying Dutchman. The legend tells that this haunted ship is unable to make port and is cursed to sail the seas forevermore. The fable of this Dutchman man of war ship first appeared in the 17th century. The supposed captain of the ghost ship was apparently inspired by stories of Baccarin folk, who exceptionally fast trips from Netherlands to Java were presumed to be aided by the devil. Sightings of the phantom ship were said to occur in bad weather and are supposed to be bad omens for those who pass her. The most famous report of the Flying Dutchman was by King George V, who reportedly saw her all aglow along the coast of Australia as they were sailing in the Bass Strait. The ship has become a famous trope in literature, art, movies since. She inspired Richard Wagner's opera of the same name, or most recently made an appearance in the 2006 film Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, interesting.
So the other ship that I have heard of when we're talking about ghost ships would be the Mary Celeste. And just a little bit about her, that this maritime myth was really made popular by Dr. Arthur Conan Doyle, the writer and creator of Sherlock Holmes. What we do know about the Mary Celeste is that she sailed from New York on November 7th of 1872, bound for Genoa with a cargo of alcohol. Almost a month later, on the afternoon of the 5th of December, she was spotted drifting somewhere between the Azores and Portugal by Dia Grata, another ship on an Atlantic crossing. Captain Morehouse of the De Grata knew Captain Briggs of the Mary Celeste to be a capable sailor and was suspicious. He ordered a boarding party to the Mary Celeste, and his crew was found a deserted ship in seaworthy condition. Captain Morehouse split his crew and sailed the Mary Celeste to Gibraltar. To this date, the fate of Captain Briggs, his wife, child, and crew of seven remains unsolved. Whether Briggs abandoned the ship because of bad weather, or whether there's a more sinister reason for their disappearance, will never be known. I just kind of wanted to add those two in there, just kind of for completeness sake, because maybe people have heard about those, maybe they haven't heard about them. But I don't think those two, in my opinion, were the more interesting ones.
Yeah, I've heard of those, but I couldn't tell you what they were about. I can never remember. It's interesting.
Yes. Very good stories tonight. I like it.
Yeah, definitely fun.
I think we may have learned a thing or two.
Yeah.
We learned some Spanish. We learned that captain's wives can hold first mates down while they're axed to death.
I mean, if he wasn't like really intoxicated, I suppose. Like really intoxicated. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. But yeah, that's what am I? What an oh!
What a story!
Yeah, I'm like, really, really. That's like just throw him under the bus when you got caught. Wow, you are a really big piece of shit.
And you know, there was, you know, a couple other ones, like, you know, you could have done the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, like, I did think some about of that kind that. Of stuff. Yeah,
I did think about that too, and I was like, you know, maybe we could save that for something else, because there's a lot of stories with that one. And the Devil's Triangle, that would be another one.
Where's that?
That, I believe, is like the Australian version of it. Like, okay. That kind of part of the, if memory serves me correctly, and I'm sure somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's the Devil's Triangle. But yeah, that's another, it's very similar to the Bermuda Triangle, like lots of weird shit A lot of weird things have happened out there and whatnot.
Yeah, so this one was a lot of fun, and I guess we'll end it there. If you guys want to follow us on Instagram, you can follow us at @midnight_in_the_mountains. You can email us at @midnight_in_the_mountains@yahoo.com. And we'll talk to you next time.
Everybody enjoy yourself, and we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.